Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jane from England. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. It's good morning here, by the way.
Yes. Yes, I was thinking about that. What time is it?
10 to 1 in the morning.
10 to 1. Wow. So you've got this big willingness to stay up late.
Yes, I know you're going to ask me about willingness to practice, and I've realized that the one thing I haven't done before is call into the show, so I now need to make that ongoing commitment, I think, now I've proved that I can be here.
Yes, well, I think you're talking right now as evidence that you have, in fact, called into the show. So what is it like practicing from abroad?
Well, I think it's quite interesting because I think I might give you two perspectives, if that's okay, because I'm based in a small village called London in the UK, but then I've lived in Africa for some years, and also I travel back there quite often. And it was actually, I first started practicing when I was overseas from here, when I was in Africa. So I actually found the first book that I read by Sherry was in Kenya. And then I went onto the website, and obviously a whole world of new opportunities was then presented to me. One thing that I recall from the time that I was living there for that time was, no matter where I was, that there was my trusty iPod and the archives on there. And that was just, the facility and the service that you provide, I don't think can be, understated. I know people regularly rave about it, but for me, particularly being in some hot, rural, quite complicated locations, all very far away from my home and my friends and family.
Yeah.
This was like a lifeline is overstating it, but just the ability to really tune and connect with people, talking from the heart and hear the wisdom that Sherry or the monks had to offer. It was so meaningful, and it's been fantastic. So for me, we've had all of these other fantastic opportunities since, but it's like the archives and open air. You're the vanilla ice cream. you're the one that the favorite that you can always go back to.
Yeah.
So that was fantastic. And then also, even in those environments, even with kind of erratic internet and electricity in some places, I was still able to access email classes, which obviously really call you to participate and challenge yourself, really, to,
yeah,
to challenge conditioning, and also get the peace quotes and those things. So that was fabulous. And then since I've been back home back mainly in the UK, to engage in reflective listening through using Skype, for example, means that, you don't even have to have significant call costs and you can talk to people all over the world.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing opportunity, as you know.
Yeah.
And then all the new good stuff that started last year. So, I mean, my projection is really that it's as easy to practice wherever you are outside the monastery, it doesn't matter. It's as easy to practice and actually engage in all of the opportunities that are offered.
Yes, and the technology that's available to us these days to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think that kind of brings us on to the tweets and the practice everywhere, which I find to be. Really, it's taken my practice to another level, because one of the things that I found is that I was at work and conditioning was fully in control, really, of my day. And then it was when I stepped outside the door that I had a space to practice. Whereas with the tweets now coming through onto my phone, which is with me all of the time, that just gives me that opportunity, and it's it calls me in a way to practice it in a way that I don't think other things have had the opportunity to do. So that's just fantastic. And I think the folks who I work with are wondering what's going on, that I keep getting these mysterious texts and stopping and smiling, but never responding.
Yes.
So I'm projecting that they think there's something strange going on there. But I really find that's a real. It's a real call. It's a real call to come back to the here and now, and the messages are just fantastic. So that's another brilliant opportunity.
Yes, and what strikes me about what you're sharing is really your willingness to take advantage of these opportunities, everywhere in the world and in every possible form that they're offered by the monastery.
I think that's it. Essentially. As I say, outside the monastery, I think it's as easy as and as hard for everybody, and it's just the willingness. If you have the willingness to engage, and you want to put dropping suffering at the center of your life, or even close to the center of your life, then there's every opportunity to help you do that. I do the at home working retreats as well. It was really funny. The first time I looked, I thought, "Oh, it's a real pity that that looks like a good opportunity, except it's the wrong time for me." And then I thought, "Well, hang on a minute, it doesn't have to be the wrong time for me. It's on a Saturday, so that's superb." So I kind of do that from 5 o'clock in the afternoon until this time. And in the last group, I'm sitting on my cushion in my pajamas. but it's a great way to end the day. Conditioning is really, really challenged by practicing at home. I find that's amazing. It's that intensity of practice. I think a number of people have said, "Wow, this has really got it going."
Yes. Jane, I've made a list here of every practice that you've mentioned: reflective listening buddies, open air archives, email classes, practice everywhere, the at home working meditation retreats. I don't think you've missed and a way opportunity to practice. I can't think of another one that the monastery offers that you're not doing.
I think you're right. I think from a distance, and I have been to the monastery as well, and I have to say that even though it's a long way for folks who may be overseas or from anywhere, I just have to put a plug in for that there is nothing wrong with you. Retreat, because that's amazing. I kind of see it as like a sort of a compassion boot camp, because you can't come out of that week and not feel a greater love and compassion for yourself. Mm. I think it's an amazing experience, and in a way, I think my willingness to engage in a lot of the other opportunities has really been really taken to another level by meeting, there's really wise and lovely folks in the monks and in Sherry and all of the folks in Sangha who are engaged in that. And I think, for me, that's really inspired me. I can stay feeling connected at a distance from having had that opportunity.
Yes. And I love that phrase, compassion boot camp. Great. And that's what it is, isn't it?
That's the way it seemed to be. It was so intense and such an amazing opportunity to really. I've never done anything like that at all, and it was just it was a complete eye opener. It was really amazing, and I can't really recommend it highly enough. I think it's brilliant.
And the other thing that's brilliant, Jane, is what a privilege it has been for me to talk with you tonight.
Well, thank you very much. It's a joy and a pleasure to be asked, and thank you so much for doing open air and for such a long and prolonged period of time as well. I keep thinking maybe Michael's going to hand it over to somebody else at some point. But so thank you, because as I say, it's really meaningful to so many people.
You are most welcome. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Okay. Good night. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael. Now, that was very, very fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. That was very fun.
Lately, we've been talking to a number of people for a variety of reasons, most of them being having to do with looking for a new location for our Zen Center in the Bay Area. People often say, well, how are you supported? You know, how's your organization supported? And I said, well, just by regular folks. And they kind of, you know, their eyebrows sort of start crawling toward each other. And I said, well, you know, we're really an international sangha. So, you know, we have people practicing all over the world. And it's so true.
That is true.
Yeah. I love it. In fact, I was reading just right before the show a list of people who are coming for retreat over the next little while. And literally all over the world, people are coming to do retreats at our little monastery. So all of the, you know, what Jane was talking about, that ability to reach people when they're in Kenya or in, you know, when they're, well, it's far away as London, for heaven's sake. You know, it's and that we can all be practicing together. It's such a unique thing in the history of practice.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's grand.
A little monastery with a big power.
Big reach.
Yes.
Yeah. It's great.
Yes, indeed. Great. I have some announcements here.
Yeah.
So, as you know, there are meal tickets that are available from Keep It Simple. And these meal tickets are, they look like business cards. They're about that size. And they're great if you want to tuck them into a letter, into correspondence, or you want to give them out to people. And what they are is they're telling people about the project in Africa. And each card costs a quarter and provides one meal for a child in Cantaloma.
Yeah, so if I want to send you a little note about something, maybe I want to send that gift, that little gift I've got to you, and I can say, for you, Michael, with love, Sherry. And I can put it right on that little card, and I've accomplished three things, really. I've expressed my appreciation to you. I've said who this present is from, so that you can, you know, get back to me on that.
Yes.
And I've provided a meal for a child.
Yes.
Good.
That's great. So if you go to the What's New page on the Living Compassion home site, that's the first page after the splash page there, and you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll find the button for meal tickets there. And coming up on Tuesday, March 16th, you'll be in San Francisco at the First Unitarian Universalist Church, and you'll be there from 7 to 9 in the evening talking about the key, and the name of the key is willingness.
And anything else anybody wants to talk about.
And the last announcement is that a new quarter of Reflective Listening Buddies will be starting up on April 15th, and you can get more information at reflection@innerpeaceworldpeace.net.
You know, Michael, another one of those things that, because of the wonders of modern technology, people can do from all over the world. Because with Skype, it's possible to talk to other people practicing anywhere.
Yes, relatively inexpensively.
Mm-hmm.
So that starts April 15th, so you can turn in your taxes and then get on the phone with your buddy.
The bad news and the good news all in one day.
And the good news. And the other piece of good news is that we have several friends here lined up to talk with us.
Right. Let's talk.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
It's Holly calling from Australia.
Well, speaking of international, How are
it's
you?
So appropriate.
Yes. How fabulous. What's going on?
Well, I just felt like it was time to just check in.
Yeah.
It was great listening to, I think her name was Jane from London.
Yes.
That was just really, really just great to listen to, just, of course, because I'm in Australia. But I'm going pretty good, actually. I mean, when I called in at the end of last year, I was sort of getting over some pretty heavy trauma that had happened in my family. And basically, I've just been really super kind to myself this summer. It's summer here, and just doing very kind things. And I also started a gratitude journal a couple of months ago, where every night or every second night I just write what I was grateful for in the day, and it's just been really great to do that.
Good, good. That's an amazing practice, isn't it? It's so simple and so life-changing.
Well, it's actually really nice to read back over because you just feel like you just had a really good time.
Yes, yes. Well, and when those voices are, you know, you can pick that up and go, wait a minute. You know, this and this and this and this and this, and you're smiling and suddenly you're happy and they've lost all of their power to affect you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been a summer of, like, doing lots of writing and practice and, yeah, so I really want to come back, but also it's kind of like an Indian teacher said once. I'll never forget this when people were going to him, going to India to see him. And he said, you know, you can come to India to see me, but India is in you. And when I start thinking, oh, you know, the monastery and all that's happening over there, I think, well, the monastery is in me. You know, like I will come back at some point and, you know, when I can save and la, 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 but this is the monastery here. It's not separate. Do you know what I mean? Like it's kind of my practice, my life, this is it. This is it here. It's not somewhere far away. That's where I get this amazing sangha feeling. It's in my room. It's in the kitchen. It's
yes. And that really, not that we don't want you here, although I will tell you, don't leave summer where you are to come here. It would not.
It's pretty hot.
It's we're not having that lovely summer experience here. But it really is the point that we are. So you come to the monastery, or you're on retreat. You're having that experience, and what we're doing is learning how to find that place inside ourselves. Right? So what you practice is what you have. The idea behind that is that you practice coming to center, being here, being present. You feel that gratitude, the love, the compassion, the kindness. You find that inside yourself. And then you practice turning your attention back to that, back to that, back to that, until that's the place where you're grounded. That's home for you. And then you can enjoy, obviously, going anywhere else and being with other people who also have that focus at the center of their lives, but you're never without. You're never bereft when you are not in the company of other people who are practicing, because you are in the company of you practicing. And that's the connection that we all have wherever we are in the world. Because we are all tapping into or plugging into the same experience. And it's not that that experience isn't the same one that's animating everyone and everything else. It's just that once we know that that's what we're doing, then we're doing that consciously, making that conscious choice moment by moment by moment.
Yeah. It's great.
I wondered, do you get the practice everywhere messages during the day?
No, I don't. I'm actually not such a techno person. Like, I don't have broadband here, and I don't use my mobile phone too much. And so I'm a little out of that loop, and sitting at a computer for long periods isn't so good with my back, too. So
No. You'd only want to do it if it's, you know, like Jane and Michael were talking about, you know, where you're just going around in your life and then there it is. But no, you don't. It's nothing that you want to track down, and it is the kind of thing that you might choose to figure out for yourself in your life. You know, whether it's whatever that is.
Often for me, it's actually just if I'm needing just to check in the day, I'll just pick up one of my books and just read a part of it, you know, like I'll pick up the key or something and then I'll read it, and it just kind of slips it back in, and then
that's who I am. I remember. Okay, got it. Yeah, I just had this image of apparently here in some school systems, I think like in high school, to give young people the clear experience that they don't want to become parents before they're planning to be parents. They give them an egg to carry around, and it's, you know, symbolizing a baby. So when you have a baby, you can't just go off and leave the baby somewhere. So they give them this egg, and they have to carry the egg around with them everywhere they go. And if they're going to do something, then they have to make arrangements for the egg to be cared for. And you know, egg, that's a pretty fragile, vulnerable little object. And I was thinking about that as a practice support, not an egg necessarily, but if a person really did carry the book around, so if it's the key, you know, that you literally carried it with you all the time. And so when you put it down, you'd have to realize where you put it. When you got ready to go somewhere else, you'd pick it up and take it with you. It would be a great reminder.
I like all that stuff. Like I like being a little creative too, you know, kind of a little funny.
Yep.
But before I go, but just something else that I've been doing is noticing actually more, I guess a little bit more. The whole subpersonality thing is just becoming a little more concrete, kind of like I'm seeing things a bit more clearly, like I'm seeing the players and the classroom, you know, and also just letting them kind of be with me, but seeing who they are. And that's been quite revolutionary for me. And then also at the same time seeing when I suddenly get very, very clouded or confused, and then I write, and it's self-hate, just having a really, really big go at me, and being quite shocked at what I read back, you know. So they're interesting processes I'm sort of experiencing at the moment.
And it takes a while for it, for most of us anyway, for it to come together in that way, doesn't it? So, I mean, you've known about personalities for a long time.
Yeah.
And yet for it really to kind of sink in that way and become a part of you,
And actually I'm finding it really helpful. Like now it's like, it's almost like the penny's dropping. It's like, okay.
yes. Yeah. So that, as we both know, So often in practice, people feel bad that they don't get it. They feel like they're not getting it. And, of course, the voices are busy telling them that they're not getting it. And yet it's that slow sinking in process that's going on in preparation for us one day to go, I get it. And then once that happens, a technique like that or a tool like that is really going to serve you in a huge way that's far beyond an intellectual understanding.
Yeah, and what actually took me to get to that place is I had a very pressing issue, and I'm like, I'm just suffering here. I'm, you know, I really, I'm going to just really narrow this down and see what's going on, because I just don't want to be in this kind of fuzz. And then suddenly it just became very clear that, oh, this actually is really helpful.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Mm.
Yes, which, again, is another huge step in practice, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned several of them. One, the realization that, wow, you know, what's going on here is that I'm really suffering. And so what is there that I can do about this? What do I know from practice that can address this and start taking it? So you've already, when you have that awareness, you've already stepped back. You're no longer in it. You've disidentified enough that you're seeing it. And then once you reach that point, okay, then what are the components here? What's really going on? Now it's not that the pain necessarily goes away, but the suffering, the level of suffering is different. In fact, we could probably say you move from suffering to pain at that point, because then it's a legitimate experience rather than something that conditioning is using against you. Yeah, and then you then you bring in the compassion, the loving kindness of the person who's experiencing this, and it becomes a whole different thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. Thank you.
Great. Yeah. Well, as Michael said to Jane, yes, practice is fabulous. It is. It's wonderful, and God knows we're all grateful for it. But we must never lose sight of the fact that it is absolutely irrelevant without the person who is willing to do it.
Mm.
So, you know, add her to your gratitude list, right?
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Good to hear your voice. Take good care of yourself, as I know you will.
Yeah, thank you. Might see you soon.
Good. We'll get an umbrella lined up with your name on it, okay?
Oh, sweet. And you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Holly. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to stop, drop, and breathe, and then we'll be right back.
Very good.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Sherry, we have some more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Jen. How are you doing?
Hey, Jen. Doing good. You?
Good. I decided to call tonight because the resistance to call was so strong that it was feeling like I should call.
It's the resistance has now become the green light.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know. Things are okay. I mean, you know, more than okay, actually. Just conditioning doesn't like me to see that.
Right, or say it, God forbid.
Yeah, right, exactly. I was really struck by the Zen grandmother lecture that you shared this weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
So give a little background, would you, for those who are not in that email class?
Sure. Well, I think, now I'm, losing a little bit. So in the email class, I think there was a little bit of a participation of, I guess someone was using a timer and finding that the timer was kind of a harsh sound, and so that was a distraction, and they felt like they might not be able to stick with using a timer that would bring them back to the present because that timer with such a harsh sound. And then they were able to find a timer with a kinder sound, and that was good. But it led you to point out that that's what happens for all of us, is that sometimes we get talked out of these great things that would bring us back because of something like a harsh sound is going to, I don't know, going to throw us off. And what really got to me was the way that you also shared, you know, how big this is. Like, there are people in, you know, like you talked about, you know, kids are starving and people are being, you know, in sex slave trafficking. I mean, it's kind of, you know, this really, not that it's wrong, but there's some really rough stuff going on out there. And if we don't, you know, take the chance to be the people that could wake up and maybe be a different choice for this, you know, man, and I'm not articulating that great. I don't know if you want to throw something else in, Sherry, but that's what I got from it.
No, that's, I think that you've done a fine job. I think the point, one of the points that I was trying to make with people is that because so many folks are caught in this cycle of beatings from self-hate and egocentric karmic conditioning, just brutalizing them all day long. You know, you get to the end of the day and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I survived that. And really nothing happened except this hideous relationship with these awful voices in a person's head. And what might all of that life force be available for if it weren't being used to destroy a perfectly good life?
Yeah, that part just so spoke to me, like, you know, how we're so beaten down from surviving our survival system all day long that we have, like, nothing left to bring to the world. And I could just so see that in so much of, you know, my life experience. And I just, you know, I don't want that for my
right.
life, or, you know, I want the other... And yet then I, of course, you know, and conditioning tried to use it against me or whatever, but, you know, and I don't think I fell for it too much. But I do see how, it, you know, probably like an hour after I read that email, I was just, you know, just in it again. Like I often, depression has just been a big way that conditioning gets me. And I still spend a lot of time being really depressed and really there isn't any reason. Like, I have this, you know, wonderful life experience going
yeah.
on, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I just
No, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you're right. I hardly know anybody, myself included, you know, at the worst of my depression, there was nothing wrong with my life. And there was certainly nothing wrong with my life that I couldn't have changed in a second.
Yeah.
But being so beaten down by, you know, there's nothing you can do, it's hopeless, there's just no way out of this, it's always going to be like this, you know, you feel like this and you're going to feel like this forever, and it's like, I give up. I can't fight that. And yet your awareness is just so critical in this, just to be able to stop and say, actually, I have a great life. So what is going on here? You know, that's just throwing the door open wide and stepping through.
Okay. I haven't felt like that because it feels like, man, how do I keep, you know, falling right back into this? Like,
well, that's the Charlie Brown in the football, right?
Yeah.
You know, how do we get the same epiphany over and over and over? How do we fall in the same trap time after time after time after time? And yet we do. So the thing that is, I think is really important about that is to get it that there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it is. It's kind of like, you know, the example that I go to, I've eaten twice today. And I'm hungry again.
Yeah.
I mean,
so there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't that enough food, for God's sake? I mean, shouldn't I was satisfied then. you know, I ate as much as I wanted to twice today. What's up with this? And yet, I mean, we all accept that, well, that's the way it works. You eat, you get full. Time goes by, you're hungry, you eat.
Yeah.
You know, that's, we don't feel bad about that. Of course, we can, because conditioning can do all kinds of stuff with that. With you ate the wrong thing, or you ate too much, or you know, whatever it is. But the process of needing to eat over and over again is not something that we feel bad about. And so needing to learn the same things over again, or have the same experience over and over again, it's like the subpersonalities. You know, I know it, I know it, I know it, I know it. Ah, okay, I know it. And even when I really, really, really know it, I can know that I'm going to forget that I know it. It's just the way we're built.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess I think conditioning does get a hold of it, because, you know, it can even use, like, you know, your, I think that's what's going on a little bit. It can use your email to be like, gosh, you know, what is your problem? You know, that you have this great life and you're still depressed. You should be out there,
yeah.
You know, and blah, blah, blah. And so.
And what we forget to say is, and I would be if you would go away and shut up.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
And, you know, Jen, it's one of those things where, you know, this might be crazy, and it might be just, well, it's not, but it might sound that way and be a little far out there. But, you know, it's not hard for me to take this little step that says, and you, Jen, are the equivalent of a sex slave to that voice. That you are being used to further its desires, its goals, its ambitions, its whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That when that's going on, you have no value except for the pleasure that can be extracted from you for conditioned mind.
No, I really see that. Yeah,
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, and it's a parallel process, because when you are trapped like that, you have no choice. You are being victimized and tortured, actually, for no purpose except what conditioned mind is going to get out of it. So, you know, just to stop and look at it that way, sometimes, because I know I have an unusual reaction to this stuff, it just ticks me off. You know, it makes me so angry that people are tormented the way they are. And, of course, you know, I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, so where that comes from is it's really unfair. I always want to fight for the underdog. You know, if I see a child or an animal being mistreated, my reaction is to want to, you know, torture to death the abuser, that sort of thing. So I have to
yeah.
reel myself in on that side of it, you know. And so, I offer that to you in kind of the hope that it will tick you off to that degree. And that, you know, the next time you find yourself in that place, there will be a part of you that says, now, wait a minute, you don't get to treat her that way. No.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, and I think that's what's missing a lot. I mean, I think it's the what you talk about, like being kind of over-identified. I mean, a lot of times, you know, I am the person in
yeah.
that, or I think I am, instead of, wait a minute, somebody else could be here to say this is not okay to treat this person in this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the person who's trapped in that circumstance really can't see the way out.
Yeah.
That's why we need this mentor to be able to come back to center for that wisdom, love, and compassion that is not identified as the one who's being subjected to this torture. And then we have now stepped back into someone who really can make a difference, who can, you know, find the escape hatch and the way to freedom.
That's really good to see, because conditioning definitely had me, you know, well, you are not in this, you know, terrible situation. You actually have this great life, but you're still, but I, you know, I didn't look at it as it's true that that part of me or that person really is in this, you know, crazy.
He's in a horrible life circumstance.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's really important to see, isn't it? Because the one who can say, I have a great life, actually has the ability to help that person who is not having a great life, instead of denying her circumstances because this other person, so, you know, here's this very small, this little Jen who's having a terrible life, and somebody older says, well, you know, I mean, what's the matter with me? I have a great life.
Mm-hmm.
No, why am I feeling bad? I have a great life. Well, because it's not you. It's little Jen. She's the one who's having a terrible time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I see, like, there's a lot of impatience from that other one of, like, you know, hurry up and enjoy this life. And it's strange, like, there is a piece of truth to that, like, to, you know, practice, like, your hair's on fire kind of a thing, for sure. But there's also, like, that's an unkindness to that person to be saying it to her, you know, hurry up and get out of this when she can't.
But she can be saved, which is, of course, from my perspective, the whole point of what the Buddha taught.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, as the one who can save her and will save her, you are the one whose life is transformed in order to become that wisdom, love, and compassion. That not that you have to become that, it's to realize that that's who you are in order to save her. You with me on that one?
I think so.
You already are that. You already are that wisdom, love, and compassion, but you have a karmic habit, as almost every human being does, of believing that you are either that small person who's being tortured, or you're the one who should be capable and competent but somehow doesn't manage to be.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're really learning to do is step back into the wisdom, love, and compassion. Recognize that that's who you are. And then from that place, save these people. Bring them into that wisdom, love, and compassion.
Okay, yeah, it's almost like by trying to push forward and say, come on, let's enjoy this great life, what's the problem here? Like, that doesn't allow for that process. It's kind of, wait, I'm going to go back and take care of everybody.
That's
and
right.
Bring everybody along. That's the difference.
Because, as you know, I'm sure, there isn't any joy without that process. You can't just, you truly can't just walk off from what you know you could affect and be happy. You can't. Which is not the same as you should be miserable because there are people in the world suffering. That's not the same thing.
Yeah.
There are people in the world suffering. It's our job to get to the wisdom, love, and compassion that can make a difference.
Oh, so keep practicing, huh?
Oh, yeah. And again, to realize, to remember that that's where the joy is. That's where the joy is. We can't be joyful by focusing on getting whatever it is for ourselves. True joy comes in the sharing of it. Again, it's not a moral issue, you know, it's just the way it is. You know, if you throw that ball up in the air, it's going to come to earth. You know, it's not personal. It's not a flawed ball. You're not a bad thrower. That's just the way it is. And it's only coming back to center, to that wisdom, love, and compassion, that we find joy.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
Those at-home working meditation retreats are just, oh my gosh, huge and amazing, and everything is such, I just can't imagine having this life experience without all of it, so thank you so much for everything.
You're very welcome. Take good care of yourself, huh?
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Jen. Good night.
Good night.
Joining us, Jen, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was a powerful image you shared.
Yeah.
Look at that relationship inside as equivalent to what we see outside and perceive as intolerable.
Yes. Yes. And you know, Michael, the thing about the way we can know that is that there are a lot of people, and I'm not saying this with judgment. I'm just saying it's kind of like throw the ball up in the air. There are a lot of people who can look at what's going on in the world and have no relationship to it at all. None.
Huh.
Or I mean, I don't know what's going on. But there's not a response of, that's terrible, I wish it were different, what can I do about that?
Right.
Okay. And so when you are a person who looks out at the kinds of circumstances that people and creatures are in the world, and it hurts your heart. You feel it personally.
Yes.
I mean, we understand that it's because we're projecting that. So
yes.
So where does that actually exist? Well, it exists in us. So rather than, I mean, for a while, it seems like a good approach would be to ignore it. To try to pretend like that's not going on. Then I'm not aware of feeling it, so it's not so painful. But after a while, that doesn't work. And so it begins to occur to us that the first place to do the work is inside, where we can actually feel it. And then when that work is done, we're available to assist wherever we are called to assist others.
Yes, yes. Doing the work within first.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the work within first, and the word that comes up when you talk about that is projection.
Mm-hmm.
And then being available to see the world more clearly.
Yeah. And to realize for each one of us that fervorino that I wrote in the email class, you know, each one of us will be used, at least as far as I can tell, will be used to the degree of willingness that we possess in any moment. So
uh-huh.
We'll be called forth to contribute in ways that we are ready to contribute. So when we talk about in Buddhism, you know, ending suffering or cleaning up karma, and I always kid people that, you know, the thing that you can expect is the better you get at cleaning up karma, the more karma there's going to be for you to clean up.
Yeah.
And when once we get to the point of realizing that that's a joyful process, that's what we are, it's kind of like, you know, you like to go to the gym and build muscle, and then you realize, well, shoot, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I could do in the world that's really practical stuff that would also build muscle.
Yeah.
So it's like that.
Yes, yes. It also feels like, tell me if this is what you're saying, that as my abilities increase, life will give me more opportunities to use those abilities.
Absolutely. And as your willingness and ability increase and you do more and it becomes obvious that you are being called to do more, you will also simultaneously realize that that's what you enjoy.
Great.
Isn't that a good deal?
That is a very good
like a full life program we can participate in.
It's a full life program. No room left over for conditioning.
No room left over to contain egocentric karmic conditioning or self-hate or suffering or misery or any of that sort of thing. Yeah.
as we like to say, it's a good deal.
It's a very good deal, yeah. And we're very lucky that we know about it.
We are indeed. Are indeed. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back for many more callers.
Great. Thanks, Michael.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Porch Dog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porch Dog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a little more than 15 minutes left, and we have five callers in our queue here.
Well, I'll do my best. How's that?
That's all we ask. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from Texas.
Hey, Janice. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I was calling in. I was kind of just checking in because I went to the New Year's retreat.
Yes.
And the idea was that I go back and process map content, how I trade beating the content, but using it as me process mapping, you know, how I do everything.
Yes.
And I was calling.
As we know, how you do that is how you do everything. Yeah.
Yes. I definitely found that true, and I was calling in, well, wanted to update you, but I haven't really been process mapping for, oh, I don't know, probably a month now, and there's sort of two reasons, and I was just going to talk to you about them,
mm-hmm.
And one reason is that me process mapping became my content. I noticed that how I process map, I became solely focused on process mapping. Like, I was process mapping like I do everything, so conditioning talked me into just thinking it was pointless. Does that make sense?
Yeah, which is really interesting, isn't it? Because it could have been the way to be able to watch it all the time.
What, process mapping and then watch how I process map?
Or? Yeah. If the way I treat my family is the way I drive, okay, then mm-hmm. probably driving would be a lot lower risk way to act it all out than
mm-hmm.
on my family.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So if conditioned mindset, well, you know, don't pay attention to how you drive or change the way you drive, then I lose that opportunity to in a relative, well, I don't know. It depends on whether you value probably your life or your family more, I guess. But I was trying to come up with one that really you know, stakes are really high and the other stakes are not so high. But if I'm a really crazy driver, I guess the stakes get kind of high out there. My point just being that if you were aware of doing the same process with the mapping, then you could do that, but bring more awareness to it so that you could see the process in a fairly non-threatening arena.
Yeah. So me being talked out of continuing to process map was just another process.
Don't you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I do, but I'm stuck in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I don't really know what to do
to me,
about it.
That's the beauty of it. That's the kind of thing you get to see. That's why I always say to people, you know, do something, and when you stop doing it, watch how you got stopped. You know, what did they say? How did they talk you out of it? What did you feel? What was the convincing argument that you finally went for that enabled them to basically win, them being the voices? You know, and then you start again, and you watch the process again. And when you stop, you know.
Because what I did was just start process mapping every content that I noticed that was similar. So I process mapped how I get confused. I process mapped how I play tennis, how I'd win. And then I was going to look and see where all the similarities were.
Uh-huh.
And go from there. And that's how I do. That's how I started it on the wall too. I was just like, I'll just put everything on the wall, and maybe it'll make sense one day. And then I get stuck in my confused process.
That's right, because you're trying to figure it out, which is the whole deal, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Kind of the is would we say the Uber process is conditioned mind turning to conditioned mind to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see that, that's good news, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Remember, we're not trying to fix anything here. We're
just
being aware
to see
of
it.
The process, right? Yeah. So, you know, it could be really fun in terms of the way you laid it out. If it turned out that, in fact, all roads lead to, I need to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a good person if I have it figured out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bad person if I'm confused and befuddled.
Mm-hmm. I have a suspicion that's where my road leads.
That's the cul-de-sac you find yourself in.
That
often.
Could very well be it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
excuse me just a sec, but what that would point you to, it seems to me, is looking to conditioned mind for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that were the case, and you knew that when you find yourself at that point again, you go, okay, I get it. And then you drop all of that and come back to the space between the figuring it out, come back to the breath, come back to relaxing, letting it all go, remembering that it's not about figuring it out or getting it right. With me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then you would be at the end of that little process map where you want to be, which is reminding yourself that it's being here in the stillness, in well-being, contentment, ease, peace, joy, that's where you want your life to be, not in letting conditioned mind figure something out for you.
Yeah, I understand that, you know, in the mind, that my resistance, what's going on is just like, oh, yeah, that, I've tried all that, and then I'm like going around like that.
Uh-huh, but of course you haven't tried all that.
No,
you're
right.
I mean, you'll want to listen to this again, okay, in the archive, because it just did it to you right there.
Yeah.
Can you see that?
No, I definitely see it.
Yeah.
I said it out loud, but yeah, I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I tried all that. Well, No. Because the point is to realize that where I want to live is in that space between this kind of feverish conditioned mind activity,
mm-hmm.
that's where life is. So it's not, I can't try that. That would be like saying Nirvana is Florida. But I went there once.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like oranges and baseball bats. So if Nirvana is Florida, then it's not a matter of going there once. It's a matter of living there.
Mm-hmm. And then can I ask you one more thing?
Mm-hmm.
There's, I was listening to your CDs, Unconditional Self-Acceptance.
Uh-huh.
So it has really been bringing me into watching movement in my body, sensations.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And the other thing I got stuck on was that right after I enter a trade, I have a huge, you could call it an adrenaline rush, but it's this huge sensation from in my chest area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge amount of energy
mm-hmm.
that I've labeled fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I breathe, it helps a lot, but it causes me to just go unconscious.
Uh-huh.
And it could just be, you know, I just need to keep breathing, but I, when listening to those CDs, I can look back into my past where I've had a trauma or something and had that same sensation. And so my behavioral reaction is to just make it stop, just do whatever it takes to make it stop.
And do you know what the correct approach would be?
No.
Well, you know, when you were talking about that, I want to put this out as a theory, okay? Mm-hmm. That you trade because it takes you to that place. Now, I'm not suggesting that you, conscious human being, in this conversation with me, do
mm-hmm.
that. But karmically. The attraction
yeah.
to doing something that would take you to a place that reminds you of a trauma that leads to unconsciousness
yeah.
and turning your life over to just do whatever will make it change.
Yeah.
You know, that's truly, that's a karma dream come true. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
karmically, I'm predisposed to want to beat it.
Well, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, let's tie it all together then. Where the work is going to be is not, first of all, obviously not going unconscious, to
mm-hmm.
not being willing to do whatever makes it different, not even attempting to change it through breathing.
Just experience it?
Hmm?
Just experience it?
Yep. Yep. It's called burning away the karma. To just sit there, and of course you're breathing. Obviously you're breathing. But you're
uh-huh.
not breathing to change it. You're simply breathing because you're a human being, and that's what human beings do. And you sit there and just simply experience all of it as it washes through and over your body. You stay conscious of it as it's happening.
Yeah. That's what I really want to do.
Yeah.
I will do
now,
that.
Now,
if I can.
Yeah, because you know conditioning really wants you not to be able to do that.
Yeah, because I can distract myself and avoid it, and I was kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't my question, but that's where I've gone is distracting myself so that I don't experience
yeah.
that.
Now, again, we it's really important not to figure this out, never to figure this out, but
okay.
to be aware that when we say I, there are a lot of folks involved.
Okay.
Yeah, and so the I who wants to trade is really addicted to the process and the resulting unconsciousness.
Yeah.
And then there is what you also call I that wants to wake up and not be the victim of karmically driven unconsciousness.
Yep.
So this is kind of, this is the place where it's being played out. And just to watch yourself go, just kind of out of the corner of your eye, watch yourself go back and forth between those two places. The
mm-hmm.
one who wants to be distracted is the one who wants you to be unconscious.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, it, this is an eyes wide open process of you do it, you know, you hit that button or whatever it is, and what you're thinking about, what you're aware of as you hit that button is stay awake, stay awake, stay awake, stay awake, stay awake. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be here through it. I'm gonna feel it in every inch of my body and see every connection that karmic conditioning has made.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, but after you said that, I was gonna ask if you suggest that I write it down, but I don't think
no.
so. I think I should just sit
no,
there.
No, because writing it down will become a distraction.
Distraction, yeah.
Now, as it begins to fade away, map it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I'll do it.
That's exciting. Good. Let us know, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thanks.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Fun sure. project.
Yes, indeed. Sherry, we have a couple more minutes here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Andrea from Asheville.
Hey there.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm kind of blown away at the moment. This has been a really amazing show just to listen to.
Oh.
And I called with all kinds of what felt like really important stuff to talk about. And I think it's really interesting that we only have a couple of minutes, but my brain feels kind of full.
Did we talk about a lot of your stuff, but with other people's content?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I think pretty much every caller hit on some aspect of what I was looking at.
Don't you love Sangha?
It's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Give
us a little taste, and then promise that you'll call early next week.
Yes, I will do that.
Good.
I think I'd like to follow through on the last caller and that burning away karma process. That
uh-huh.
just really, that hit home as something that I guess with the content that I'm working on, I am trying so hard to figure it out.
Uh-huh.
And I am doing that process of going to a place of pain and old trauma and going unconscious and then coming around and going, wow, I'm suffering so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that process sounds like something I need to do.
Yeah. You know, are you a meditator?
Yes.
So just to establish that for everybody, because as you know, that's the magic of meditation. You know, there you sit down to meditate, and it's with a commitment to sit there. You know, I'm going to sit there, and I'm going to breathe, and I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to stay present. And then you watch the show. And as we become more committed or devoted or whatever it is, we're willing to sit through more stuff. You know, at the beginning, if their nose itches, they just think they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the point where, yeah, well, that's after a while, that gets really painful, sure enough. And we sit through that, or the mind is doing all kinds of things. You know, it's going back to old traumas, and we find that we just sit. We just sit and breathe, sit and breathe. We're not fighting with it or arguing with it or trying to. We just sit and breathe, sit and breathe, sit and breathe. And that's the training for what we're talking about now, walking around in life.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever happened,
you know,
go ahead.
Just what really struck me as she started to talk about her story about trading, I projected a value judgment at some point. There was some part of me that said, oh, well, that's something that she doesn't need to do. And then as I started thinking, realizing that I was just projecting my own ambivalence about my own content, and realizing that who knows what would be on the other side of that process.
Oh, exactly. That's why our little thing about it's not what, it's how is so critical.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, it does, on a certain level, it doesn't matter what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what we do is our karma.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So you're a bartender. And I would say, oh, well, you know, I couldn't stand to be, you know, smelly,
mm-hmm.
smoky bars and all those drunk people. I couldn't stand that. But if that's your karma, then that's where you are. And you could dislike it intensely. You could love it. You could whatever. But it is the place where you are. And that's the place where you're going to see through your karma.
And change your relationship to it.
As you see it and see through it, absolutely. And that's that the power of it, of burning it away, not figuring it out, because of course that's just conditioned mind perpetuating it. And the reason that that's always true is that the clarity we're looking for comes from the wisdom that is available to us in the spaces that show up when conditioned mind for a split second is not being allowed to noodle its way into greater confusion. So when we're sitting, we're breathing and letting everything go, just breathing and letting everything go. And what we're training ourselves to do is be present to those spaces that give us access, or more correctly, that gives wisdom access to us. Because it's like,
mm-hmm.
it's, right, the brilliance is trying to get through this shield of protection that egocentric karmic conditioning has put up around us.
Mm.
Yeah? So, ironically, everything we do to try to figure it out digs us in deeper.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
Mm-hmm. So as mm-hmm. you practice just coming back, and you know, you don't have to practice coming back to anything huge. Come back and just take a long breath and look at a tree. Look at a star. Look at your toes. Just be fully present for the length of that breath. You're creating that gap that awareness is will use to inform you. Okay, now I know they're gonna cut us off here. So will you look at this and get back with me next week?
Absolutely. I'll be very curious to see how it's different in 1 week as well.
Yes.
Given all this new information. Thank you
Good.
So much.
Thank you. Thank you. Talk to you next week.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to another great edition of Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, are you still there?
Hi.
Sherry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. I don't know if I pressed the wrong button there or what. Anyway, as I was saying, I'm deeply grateful for your commitment and for everyone else who's involved with this show.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It warms my heart.
Mine too.
Yeah. Thanks,
Thank
Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.